Welcome to Love, Honor, and Asperger's, a podcast for partners in autistic or narcissistic relationships. Join author April Anderson and her guests as they delve into their personal experiences and offer their insight. With wisdom and wit, this podcast will provide listeners with invaluable guidance, unwavering support, and compelling real-life stories. Ready? Let's dive in.
Hello, my Cassandra brothers and sisters. Welcome to today's episode of Love, Honor, and Asperger podcast. Today, I have a repeat guest who is on episode 3. Her name is Lisa. And on episode 3, she told us her very dramatic, heartwarming, and heartbreaking story. But today, we decided we would discuss the profile of a Cassandra. After all, that's our theme. Welcome to the program, Lisa.
Hi, April. Thank you for having me back.
So glad to have you.
Glad to be here.
So what are your thoughts on the profile of Cassandra? Because I know you've had so much experience. She's very knowledgeable, does a lot of research, and basically helped so many of us with this terrible condition. They call it Cassandra Affective Disorder, which is like a PTSD.
It is kind of very much like a form of PTSD. In fact, it is actually in the DSM-5, there is no such thing as Cassandra syndrome. It was named because of the mythology.
Right.
We are not believed. We are living these lives behind closed doors. If we were to tell anybody our story other than another Cassandra, no one would believe us. So I'm wanting to discuss the profile of a Cassandra, a type of woman who settles for less than nothing from a partner.
Mm-hmm.
How did we get here? It's shocking. It's surprising. Once we're a year in, 5 years in, 10 years in, There are certain traits of an autistic person. In fact, there are about 300.
Oh my gosh.
And I know someone with 149.
Wow.
So there are a lot of traits. Just as there are traits of the person who is narcissistic, autistic, a predator, looking for a mate, what traits do we have?
Mm-hmm.
What are the traits that we have that other women don't have necessarily, who do not end up in these situations?
Right.
The first one is, of course, empathy. Empathy is incredibly lauded. It is glorified. Mm-hmm. People love to say, I'm an empath. What it is to me, this is my opinion.
Okay.
It's a state of ultimate projection. You are literally bleeding out for another person, feeling the feelings of another as if you know exactly how they are feeling.
Mm-hmm.
It's beyond putting yourself into another person's position.
Right.
It is a state of no boundaries.
Right.
What it does is it renders you ineffectual. It is not the same thing as compassion. It's not, we use the term empathy and compassion interchangeably. To me, they are two completely different states.
Okay.
And that may be a topic for another podcast because we would get off track here. So first, what a man who's on the prowl sees is a woman who's empathetic.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, dating sites are filled with guys saying, I need a woman who's nurturing, giving, caring, willing to do things for me. Okay? Mm. Swipe left. They see empathy. They see compassion. Second thing they see is vulnerability. And in my case, that is exactly the state I was in. My husband had died months earlier. And in comes the knight in shining armor to rescue and be a savior and be there and be helpful. So we are targeted. And anybody who thinks otherwise, you know, sometimes it's not always the case, but mostly they can zero in. The only time an autistic man has intuition or anything that looks like intuition, it's more of an animal instinct. It's not coming from here or from here in our heart. It's coming from the reptilian brain.
Right.
We are their meat. So they basically are looking for a wounded animal, someone to rescue, to save. It's very much like being captured by a narcissist, Only most of the time, autistic men lack charm and charisma, both of which are horrible traits, in my opinion. I see charm and charisma and game and a player, and I don't want anything to do with that person. So the autistic man looks completely innocent.
Right. My guy did. You know, I want to just make a comment that it's the first time I've ever thought about this with my ex that I met when we were young. I was like, I can't think how you were saying it, but vulnerable. I never thought of it this way, but I was back in the 70s, late 60s, when you're 25 years old, you're supposed to be married. And so exactly. I never thought of myself. I never really was real crazy about it, but I just knew I should be doing this. And he snuck himself in. I always said he weaseled himself into my family. And it was this feeling, I guess, that I really needed to get married. In my little town, they used to actually put pictures of you, you know, your engagement. And they said, April Anderson will marry. And then everybody went, at last. God, I'm not kidding you.
At 25?
Wow. Yeah. So I was raised in a time where actually, I think about it now, he did zero in on, I was vulnerable. I never thought of it that way. I just thought, oh, it's a beach romance. But anyway, so that is something I just.
Well, I know the story of my former partner's mother and father. The father had autistic spectrum disorder. Mm-hmm. He was in the army. He saw something shiny and she had been jilted by her boyfriend. She was ripe for the picking.
That's another one.
She was a disaster and he went right in for the kill.
Exactly.
And it was a horrible, sad, loveless. They slept in separate bedrooms.
Oh, boy.
He was an only child. And I mean, just that's a whole other thing.
But there you go with that. Predatory. Okay. So we have the trait of the empathy. How about being a highly sensitive person? That's the same.
Being a highly sensitive person usually means we don't like the bright lights at Walmart. We can't stand loud. Okay. Mm-hmm. But we also... there's empathy involved in that.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, being a highly sensitive person and then a highly sensitive person meets with that and they seem to be highly sensitive themselves. Oh, absolutely. Kindred spirits, right? So empathy, vulnerability, having just been through a trauma. Feeling you have to get married. The clock is ticking. So they activate their animal instincts and find you. Women with low self-esteem. That is the topic of the last 20 years. You know, I'm almost sick of the term self-esteem, like we're supposed to esteem ourselves. I refer to it as healthy self-regard. Once you grow that, once you regard yourself, love your neighbor as yourself, not instead of yourself. So once you are in a state of, I deserve to be happy. Also don't like the word deserve, but we don't have anything to replace that right now. It is okay for me to be okay. Mm-hmm. We don't have that when we're 20, 25.
No, we don't.
So, and I mean, my story is to just let the audience, whoever's listening, know I did this in reverse. I had a neurotypical husband when I was very young, still in college. We got along just fine for 3 years. We were very different. He was an executive. I am not.
Mm-hmm.
So we parted. And then when I met my true love husband with whom I had my kids, we were both creative. He was a musician. He died. That's what happened. He died. I was out of my mind crazy.
Mm-hmm.
I have the background of a Cassandra. I have the childhood abuse of a Cassandra. But how did I manage to only have neurotypical relationships, harmony, peace, kindness, love, good sex, support, comfort, being able to have a conversation, being able to be at ease, being able to be myself? Then I get trapped by this guy.
Wow.
How does that happen?
I don't know.
Eventually that setup was going to possibly catch up with me.
Mm-hmm.
See, and I knew him before my husband knew him. We knew him before my husband got sick. We knew, you know, there was a little something different about him, but he was always very nice, very kind. And I am an introvert, but he was even more introverted. So during gatherings, I would go over and talk to him
and
share whatever we had in common. So empathy, vulnerability, low self-esteem, Okay, so we're set up, and I'll go back to how we are set up for this. Openness. There's a test online. There's a test that psychologists use, often called the Big Five. It's openness, creativity, and conscientiousness, neuroticism, trait neuroticism, and I forget what the other thing is, extroversion, introversion. Even if you are an introvert, you are open to other people.
Right.
You love people. You love humans. Mm-hmm. So that's a trait. Almost always, when you really dig into the life of a Cassandra, they have experienced a horrible trauma in their past. It could be sexual assault. It could be they were beaten by their parents. There may be multiple traumas. Then they trauma bond with the autistic person, because why? The empathy kicks in. Even if they sense there's a little something wrong with that person,
right?
Oh, I can help them. I can fix them. I can rescue them. And that's where empathy gets a little creepy, because you're projecting, and it's arrogant. It's arrogant to think, if you are educated and knowledgeable about autism or bipolar disorder or anything, my love will cure them.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, it's well-intentioned, but it's a double-edged sword. It's also incorrect. You cannot fix your partner.
Well, I thought about when we were talking about this. I had a wonderful childhood. My parents loved me, always gave me self-esteem, always told me I was could do anything. And they were fun. They were loving. However, so I'm trying to connect this trauma bound. I can't. And I, so what do you think about this? When I was 2 years old, we lived in Vermont in a really rural town. And I put a little doll, Chide, on a slate mantelpiece, stood on a chair. The mantelpiece weighed 50 pounds. I fell, the thing fell, smashed my hand. And I swear, I remember my parents grabbing me. I can remember seeing the blood on a table, a napkin thing, you know, like a little cloth. I swear I can see my broken fingers, the blood. I don't know when you're two. I was three in the hospital. So I was basically three.
We can have memories of being in the crib. I don't buy you're 6 years old and suddenly your memories kick in. No.
I was very fearful. You know, I was fearful throughout childhood of separation from my mother, even though she was in the hospital, you know, with me, and I went through the whole thing and all that. And I just wondered if something way deep in my psyche is what drew me to my, beside the fact that I was getting older, but why, once you do marry or become involved with an autistic fella, in my case, narcissistic also, and they're not, things aren't right, but, you know, like you say, we think we're going to fix it. I can't think of the word you just used. And I'm just wondering if I didn't have this trauma situation where I know other women, I think, that would never have settled for some of the stuff I settled for.
Absolutely. You know, having that trauma at that age, here you are born with your temperament, born with your brain, your predispositions. That happens to you at the age of two, did you say?
Well, I turned three in the hospital, so we'll call it three.
Okay, so almost 3 years old. That's very young. You remember it. It's in there. It's a trauma. It could have caused some degree of post-traumatic stress disorder. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. I mean, it matters greatly. And you're
I know what you mean. It doesn't influence her. Yeah.
You were separated for that week or however long. It terrified you. The incident terrified you. Of course, that's enough to have an impact on your brain development. And
so
the world is not a safe place. I have to be safe.
That's what I liked about when I met him. He seemed so solid. I think I was looking for that kind of thing. You know, just solid. We had everything seemingly in common. But you know why? My mom knew. Honest to God, she did. My mom knew there was something off with him. But I was blind to it. Because I guess wanted to be involved with a fella and be married at 25. Oh my God, old maid kind of thing. But I always question what we're talking about today is our profile of a Cassandra and our traits and how do we get that way? And I'm thinking that probably had a big influence on it, you know? Or if we did get this way, you know, why couldn't we get out? Or why didn't we know?
Well, see, that's another podcast, because there are reasons why you can divorce a narcissist. Boom. So easy.
Yeah.
You can divorce a person who's beating you for whatever other reason or financially abusive. Getting out of a relationship with an autistic partner is excruciating.
Mm-hmm.
It is a battle. And people go, why do you stay? Why do you stay? Why? You're not staying because you are having a good time. Getting away from these guys without them going off or having a meltdown.
Oh my God.
The exhaustion, the day-to-day exhaustion of interacting with them and having these circular arguments. And he's logical and you're crazy. They project all their bad stuff onto you.
Right.
It's exhausting.
Yep.
And especially if you have three kids, you know, you have to weigh, you know, so many women stay because of the kids.
Mm-hmm.
I say get the hell out because of the kids, if you can.
Mm-hmm. See, a lot of people can't. They really can't. But.
And they really fight. Here's what keeps women stuck. Illness and exhaustion.
And I had illness, too, because of the mold of my
house. Oh, you will get illnesses just from the stress of.
Yeah, you add that to having your whole house full of toxic mold. And I
love that.
It was terrible, Lisa, honestly. And I know in my 40s when I was so sick and I was an athlete running businesses and all, I like to feel, I'll never know, of course, that I would have had the strength to leave him. But when you're sick, I mean, you're actually not only you're sick emotionally and being abused, you know, verbally abused and all that. I was physically sick and no one could figure out what was wrong with me until we tore the whole house apart after 17 years. And by the way, which we won't go into that man probably could have helped me. He had insight into what could have been wrong, but because of his lack of interest in me and his can't make the connection, as he said,
right.
He had another friend, you know, he could have helped me 5 years into it instead of 17 years.
Oh, exactly. And here's the thing, 5 years in, 1 year in, you're still going, wait, what's happening? Wait, how can I fix this? And as much as the autistic mantra is, I will try, I'm trying, I'm trying. They're very trying. They're trying our patience. Okay. But they try nothing. They can say they try all they want. We're the ones trying. How do we do this? How do we fix this? What couples therapist is going to help? It's never going to work unless the Cassandra person decides she can live on the bottom pyramid of Maslow's pyramid of needs, the bottom rung. And some of us don't even get that much. Mm-hmm. Maslow's pyramid of needs, it goes all the way up to personal fulfillment or self-actualization. Most of the women that I talk to are living with, okay, they have shelter, they have food.
Right. There must be more.
Okay. Okay, that's great. They have indoor plumbing. That's great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and when you compare it to after an earthquake in Haiti, you're grateful. Mm-hmm. It's great to be grateful, but human beings need more than that. Right. Human women need tending. We need
exactly.
to be supported.
We try so hard to not need. I tried not to need more.
So what you have to do, what ends up happening is inadvertently, for a period of time, you try to become autistic. Not feel, not need, have no humor.
Mm-hmm.
Become a robot, an automaton, because it looks so good. In fact, one time I actually said to him, he said, tell me when I'm being autistic.
Oh, geez. Now, God.
I said, all the time. I mean, I have a really good sense of humor. It's kind of dry, but he doesn't get it. And he one time said something incredibly obtuse. And I was trying to cook and he's running around the kitchen like I'm dodging a Roomba. And I'm like, could you please get out and just let me cook. I'll be done in 1 minute.
Mm-hmm.
But he wants to, you know, mess around on the stove and he's just there. And the fact that he's there and not helpful.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh my gosh, he made a comment. And I said, oh my gosh, it must be wonderful to be autistic. And he said with this big grin,
dear,
it is pretty awesome.
Oh my word. Maybe in certain ways it's easier.
You don't feel, you're not connected, you don't attach, you don't expend any energy in the direction of the other.
Mm-mm.
What the heck?
I'm in. And he really didn't really get upset. I mean, I don't care what it was.
No, he thought it was funny.
It'll be okay. It's all right. No matter. Whatever it would be. And I'd be like tearing my hair out about something. How about we had problems with our kids at certain times that I had to deal with. Why would he bother? So, you know.
They're not good parents.
Male or female.
They just do not.
No, he just really would just like come home from work and maybe that's it. You know, and I did everything as far as like.
But this one thought that was, I mean, I'm not married to him. He thought his ex-wife, that was her job.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he paid the bills. He went to work. He went to the gym. He had his outside affairs. And
but wouldn't you say if we were telling this to somebody that's not in an autistic relationship, like my friends that I tried to tell for years, they'd say, oh, my husband does that. All men.
They all say that's all men. That right. is not all men. Because no. I have friends who are neurotypical men. That is not all men. I know men who are devoted to their wives for their life. Mm-hmm. My husband was devoted to me. He was there. He was on board. He was changing diapers. I mean,
Yeah,
this guy, no. Mm-mm. So, and there's like, there are generational things sometimes where, you know, this is how this is supposed to go. No, I have heard in certain group therapies, women say, that's all men. I think all men are assholes.
Right.
Not true. Absolutely.
Oh, it's not true.
Mm-mm.
I know couples it's not. I just read a book. It's really interesting called His Needs, Her Needs. Mm-hmm. And the guy was a marriage counselor and he said he can never fix marriages until he finally figured out he had a theory that he developed called everybody that has good marriages has mutual extraordinary care.
Absolutely.
And if you have mutual extraordinary care, you will always have deep love, attraction. And honestly, you talk about the opposite of mutual extraordinary care.
They can't. And this is, you know, people, women will yammer on, and I get it. They want to be on the floor screaming and pounding their fists.
Right.
Why is he like this? Why won't he do this? Why does he have pathological demand avoidance? Why does he have obstinate defiant disorder? Mm-hmm. Why does he have OCD? Why won't he take the garbage out? It isn't, I will always say, because he's autistic.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds like I'm being a smartass. I'm not.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the brain that is underdeveloped or undeveloped or missing altogether, and really neuroscience doesn't know yet.
Mm-hmm.
Because the fMRI contrast scan of a psychopath looks very much like that of an autistic person.
Oh, boy.
Okay. Oh, boy. Yeah. And some people actually are now... Okay, we have to say, am I allowed to say Jeffrey Dahmer? We can cut that out.
No, sure. You can say anything you want.
Jeffrey Dahmer was autistic and a psychopath.
Wow.
Okay, that's an extreme case. Mm-hmm.
Well, a lot of famous people are autistic. I mean, tons.
Oh, God. Anthony Hopkins, Daryl Hannah.
Bill Gates and all. I looked it up. Charles Lindbergh. I read the best book called The Aviator. And I only read a couple pages of it. And they talked about how he stood in line greeting people and with no expression on his face. And couldn't respond or something. I went, hey, that sounds like
Nikola Tesla, for sure.
Oh, him, for sure.
People want to pin autism on Mozart. I disagree. I think he was probably in the 180s as far as IQ. He had a horrifying, traumatic childhood. He probably
He had lead in his house. I just visited his place.
And he had bipolar disorder. And here's the thing. People with bipolar disorder, think about our musicians. Our artists,
mm-hmm.
or the really, really like Robin Williams and Sinead O'Connor, who is the singer from the Cranberries. There are extraordinarily creative people who have these miserable lives. Mm-hmm. You know, they have their cycle of even, they're good, they are feeling great, normal. Mm-hmm. Then they have their mania when they're at their most creative. And that could have been Van Gogh. That could have been.
I saw Bob Marley, One Love show, and he was pretty tormented himself.
Andy Warhol, probably level 2 autism.
Mm-hmm.
Who else was I just... I mean, you read about it all the time, and you start putting this together, and you know the traits. Mm-hmm. And we do know traits of certain politicians, famous people. I mean, here's the thing. Creativity belongs to the neurotypical, and genius belongs to the neurotypicals, and possibly people with schizophrenia, bipolar disorder. There are other brain disorders.
But we don't want to be married to them.
We don't. We don't. But we always classify people with autism as totally lacking in creativity. There are musicians who are, I mean, Radiohead guy, Tom York, autistic, can't have a conversation, amazing lyricist, amazing singer, amazing musician. So there are exceptions to every generalization, but we have to speak generally or we can't get the information out there. I want to continue with what is our particular array of traits that will attract this partner. So here are the bad traits are empathy, vulnerability, low self-esteem, too open, too open, openness. We've experienced a horrible trauma or series of traumas, so we can fall prey to predators. We're too trusting. So
open. I was so open and so trusting.
I'm still too trusting. And the biggest one is a way too high tolerance level for pain, neglect. If you don't get your needs met as a child, you begin to believe your needs don't matter.
Right.
What does that do? This is why I think empathy is a disorder. It turns us into, we either split off into a narcissist,
mm-hmm.
or we split off into what we love to call ourselves. Oh, I'm an empath. That's nothing to be glorified. We are not saints. It is not a good thing to bleed out for other people. But we do. We go, oh, that poor person. Mm-hmm. I need to help them. I need to save them.
Mm-hmm.
So they're looking for a caregiver, a mommy, a broodmare, somebody to take care of them. Here we are. The wonderful traits we have, you know, they go after pretty. They definitely go after pretty, healthy, fit, you know, attractiveness, intelligent. They love intelligent women. It doesn't matter how stupid they are.
I've never met so many smart people as with my Cassandras. Never.
I gotta agree. Interesting. We are interesting people. Uh-huh. We can hold a conversation. We're entertaining to uh-huh. them. I mean, I'm pretty boring, but to an autistic person, they're like riveted because they have nothing to say. We are socially adept. We may be introverted. We may be shy ourselves.
Uh-huh.
I'm not the life of the party, but we have social acumen that mm-hmm. they do not possess.
Right.
We are seemingly, we may not be, but to them, we seem stable
mm-hmm.
and happy and pretty contented, and we're going about our lives. We seem capable, independent. They can't care for anyone, so we're capable and independent. Wow, perfect match. See, I don't believe in the opposites attract thing,
mm-hmm.
but I do believe in the predatory thing. That when mm-hmm. a man targets a woman or vice versa, a woman can target a man,
mm-hmm.
you know, just as easily and go, oh, that right. guy, he'll fall for this.
Right.
We are givers. We are generous. We are taught as children, give people the benefit of the doubt. Give people the shirt off your back. Do what you do out of love. Just do it because it's the right thing to do. Right?
Right.
What happens is our needs never get met.
Mm-mm.
We are giving to others to our detriment. So since they have social awkwardness, we make them appear normal.
I love that part. I absolutely loved it. I love it. I wrote it in my book.
Yep.
I can't think of the book about Decorate Your Life. There's a song, Decorate You. And I thought he used me and the kids. We live in a small town. He was an attorney, knew mm-hmm. everybody. But mm-hmm. we brought him validity.
Normalcy.
We covered for him. I even got an argument with him one time saying, we would take classes, and we did all kinds of stuff. But I said, would you just not always talk about me and the kids? You don't have the right. I didn't feel he had the right to use us in that manner because he would, when he got home, he didn't even talk to us. He didn't, you know, he didn't do what he should do.
But yet he produced those children, not you.
Yeah, but he would just go on about us. I mean, we brought him legitimacy.
Right.
He used us for that. That's why I think he never wanted to separate, even though I would try to get out off and on.
I said once, all you saw was something shiny and you wanted that on your arm. And because there's a huge age discrepancy, walking down the street, I have gotten looks from older women that kill. It's almost like, what are you doing?
Oh, yeah, that'd be me.
I should be. And I'm thinking, lady, take him.
You want him?
Yeah, but she doesn't know, you know.
No, they don't know. That's funny.
They don't know. But what, not only do we bring, we make them look normal, we also make them feel I'm okay. Because look what I have.
So. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So they feel
so
like,
happy. So happy that we do that for them. Thank you very much. Thank
welcome.
You so much.
You know, we're flexible, we're moldable, very agreeable. You know, when especially when you're first getting to know somebody, we're just like, oh, yeah, okay, mm-hmm. absolutely. You know, the sky is purple. We're being, because we are so indoctrinated in childhood
mm-hmm.
to just either shut the fuck up or you know, be a good little girl, sit down, be seen and not heard. That carries over. And for me, it caught up with me.
That's a shame.
It is. It's a shame, but I'm trying my best at this point. I'm never going to be grateful to him for teaching me a wonderful lesson that I didn't need. No, not that. But I'm trying to use it as, wow, okay, I don't think it's inevitable that we have to revisit our horrible childhood and relive it. But here I am, and I'm paying attention to it and learning. I am basically being my own mother at this point.
You are.
Yeah, my mother's not a very good mother, so, and never was. So I basically did not have a mom.
Mm-hmm.
But I did have a wonderful grandmother. I want to say that, you know, for those of us who had horrible childhoods with absolutely no loving person, I did have a grandmother who loved me.
That's what they say. They have to have some validity of any family member.
Yeah, taught me. Yeah, a lot of what you hear coming out of me is my grandmother.
Wow.
It's like, here it is.
Yeah.
Stuff she taught me when I was three.
Wow.
So, yeah, these guys somehow, there is a whole group of women on the planet who love the shy guy.
Mm-hmm.
I do not. I don't like the crazy party person who's, you know, coming after me in mm-hmm. a creepy way. But to find a shy guy intriguing and mysterious, I hear this story over and over again, and you find out they're an empty vessel.
Yeah, they're an empty vessel.
But they captivated because people interpret shy and reticent as being charming
mm-hmm.
or that they know something, or I can't explain.
That's how my guy got along with so many people and why I was a Cassandra so much, because he was so affable, quiet. He just seemed like a very kind, caring person. And he actually was. He put his mask on around people.
Well, that's the maddening part
mm-hmm.
because with us, they're horrible.
Mm-hmm.
They give us nothing. They're transactional. They're miserly. They punish us. The silent treatment. I mean, we could go on.
Oh, God, all that stuff.
That's a whole other subject. But when they're out and about, and especially in front of me, his facial demeanor changes. He stands up straight.
Boy, thank you so much.
He gets away with looking people in the eye by looking them right here between
me. Oh, wow.
So it looks like he's making eye contact, but he can't really make eye contact.
Wow, that's interesting.
He's always looking away. And if I do direct eye contact with him, like I'm really like doing something, he can't. It's like a dog. He looks away.
Wow.
Well, when he's out and about, he will talk to people and, oh, sure, I'll do that for you. Oh, yeah. Hi, how are you? He turns into this. It's almost like a narcissist.
Yeah, he would help so many people.
Oh, the helping.
Collect cans and take them to the ladies collecting cans. I mean, all this stuff, holy mackerel. They filled themselves up the way they knew how, I guess. Well, Lisa, do you have any last thing to say? Or I know you've talked about a poem that you might want to read. If you have anything to add.
I'm kind of a Mary Oliver fan, or I was when I was younger. What I always say when I hear someone say, I can't leave. I need a hip replacement. I can't leave. I have two kids.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I will quote Mary Oliver's poem, The Summer Day. Her last line, tell me, what do you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? When I say that, I'm talking to myself as much as I am talking to any Cassandra.
That's a wonderful line.
We
about you repeat that, Lisa?
Tell me, what do you plan to do with your one wild and precious life?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's beautiful, and I think it hits to the heart of this matter. We get one go around.
That's the thing. We have one go around. Well, thank you for all your information and your, I don't know, your deep, deep thoughts. And I mean, you are deep, and all of us were going around just like, I don't know what, buzzing around like little busy bees or like moths to the flame, our brains jumping everywhere because we didn't know what this was. And I think to break it down and to try for us to get some strength and knowledge is just so helpful. And so mm-hmm. I really appreciate you coming on today.
Absolutely.
And we'll talk again soon. Do you have any last things you want to say?
I don't know. You got me with moths to the flame. I'm already.
Yeah, that's, you know, we jump from okay, not okay, okay, not okay, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, the confusion.
Yeah, the confusion.
I can speak to that at great length another time.
We'll try that again. Okay, thanks so much, Lisa. You take care.
I appreciate you having me on. It was a pleasure.
And good luck with your life, too. And so sorry you lost your wonderful soulmate.
Me too. But I carry on. So.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to this podcast. Please review, subscribe, and tell a friend. My website is www.aprilanderson.net. And remember to trust yourself, be strong, and don't let them get you.